It is 9:31. We're always concerned about mental health here at WWL, and we spend every other Tuesday talking to our friend Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. And today we're going to talk about boredom and kids. Good morning, Dr. Judy. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, Tommy?
I'm okay. Dr. Judy, fresh off of her appearance at SoFi Stadium, where she watched her 49ers play the Rams. Accurate?
Don't even talk about it. Yeah. I'm so bummed out about that game. But, yeah, it was nice to see them in person, obviously.
Did you have fun, at least?
Until the tides turned. Yeah. Until the tides turned. But you know what? There was so many more 49ers fans at the stadium. I mean, it was like home game. It was ridiculous. Yeah. So I was at least in good company.
It did look like a 49er home game. It really did. Let's talk about kids and what the neuroscience shows about always keeping them. You know, sometimes we think that we always have to have the electronic device in the kids' hands, or they always have to be quiet or kept occupied or this or that or the other thing. What does the research show, Dr. Judy?
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting, right? We've kind of, I read this article on Psychology Today that your staff was so kind to send me. And, you know, it was about sort of earlier generations being raised, basically being bored and figuring things out to do, right? And actually, that probably sharpens your imagination and also builds distress tolerance, I would think, because it's really about, you know, well, when you can't have what you want exactly when you want it, what are you going to do about it? You know, and that's a good life skill. I think, obviously, it's always one of those things where sometimes too much of a good thing maybe gets a little too extreme and then it's not so good. And I think that good thing is that we've started to learn that, hey, parents should be more hands-on with their children, right? And so now we're constantly trying to entertain our kids at every turn. And, oh, you have to, no matter how long of a work day you had, you still have to spend dedicated time with your kids when you come home. You know, there's all of these things that I think feel a lot more like what is supposed to be good parenting these days. And maybe parents are working a little too hard. That's a possible interpretation of that. That's probably why, as we talked about a few weeks ago, the Surgeon General's warning about parenting stress being at an all-time high, because parents are working out of the house. They're busy. They're full-time employed. At the same time, they're also spending more than ever time with their children when they do have free time. And that's a lot. You know, when do you have time for yourself, or when do you have time just to decompress, do the things that you want to do for a change? And maybe that's the piece that we should know, that it's okay sometimes if you're not constantly with your kid doing things that they want to do. Maybe it's okay sometimes that they're figuring it out for themselves.
And yet, as I read this, I think that, you know, what's the old saying? Idle hands are the devil's workshop. You got to keep them busy.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, you know, again, I think it's all about moderation, right? Like, you can't just have them sitting around all the time and expect them to figure things out and learn things. I mean, you do have to stimulate them. You do have to teach them. You do have to, you know, do things that help them to challenge themselves. So it's probably just like anything else. Maybe the answer is somewhere in between. Like, hey, whenever you can and you have the capacity, you know, try to challenge your children, try to spend quality time with them. But, you know, every once in a while when you're just too tired, or it's not really possible, or maybe you're dealing with your own stuff and you just need a night off, maybe that's okay too.
You know, I was watching some of the funeral coverage of Sybil Morial yesterday, and Mark Morial, mm-hmm. her son, was saying that, you know, if you were her child, you had chores, you had this, you had that, you had responsibilities, you had to do this. Do chores sometimes get left out of this? And would that be talk about the importance, I guess, of chores when it comes to raising kids, what the research indicates about not only keeping them entertained and occupied, but giving them something to do and contributing to the family and a feeling of accomplishment, et cetera.
Oh, absolutely. Chores are, I think, essential. I don't remember when I had chores. I don't think that, you know, they're called chores in our house. I mean, it's just like things that we did, right? I was born in Taiwan, so I didn't come to the United States until about age 9. And so I don't really actually know what the equivalent of the word chores is in Mandarin, because I don't think we use them in our household. or maybe there isn't one. I don't know. But, you know, we didn't really call them chores. I just had responsibilities. And it's pretty much as far back as I remember. And so, you know, Luca, he's almost three. And he's been doing, you know, quote unquote chores. I mean, I don't know, since he was maybe one and a half. I mean,
really?
Obviously, it's developmentally appropriate. Like, he helps me to put the laundry in because he thinks that it's fun. He thinks it's fun when I'm doing chores. I mean, that's how it started. Look,
I didn't think you had him paved in a driveway or anything. I wasn't saying that.
No way. I mean, listen, you know, just because I'm a psychologist, like, obviously far from a perfect parent, this all started organically because he started getting interested in the things that I was doing. And I was like, oh, well, you want to help mommy do her laundry? So he would, you know, help me load the clothes into you know, the laundry, and then he would, into the washing machine, and then he would, you know, close the door and press the button. And so he's been doing that, you know, for at least a year, and then he sees me putting dishes away, so I started having him put his own dishes away. He can't reach the higher cabinets, but he can reach his cabinet, right, where his dishes are. So I was like, well, you can put your stuff away. So that's kind of how that all started happening. It was a very organic process. I didn't force it. But then I realized, oh, he's interested in what I'm doing. So he helps me cook, right? Even though, of course, he's 2 and a half. He's very supervised. But it's like, okay, well, you can mix the batter for the pancakes. And so kids actually, you know, if you give them the chance, they like observing what adults are doing. They want to be like you, right? And that's a perfect chance to get in there and be like, okay, well, you know, why don't you help me with some of these daily activities? And then as they get older, obviously you can expand on how much they can do.
Somebody texted in and said, my kids look at board games, B-O-A-R-D, as B-O-R-E-D games, board games. What can you say about, I guess, I think there is something to be said about a family getting together and playing a good old-fashioned board game where you're talking to each other in between rolls of the dice, et cetera?
Oh, yeah. I love board games, but probably took a little while before I developed an interest in them. I tried to buy some, you know, what I thought were age-appropriate board games. Believe it or not, they do make them for two-year-olds. But yeah, no, Lucas not having it. I mean, he's like, what is this? So I think that maybe it's a developmental thing, maybe it's a personality thing, but I think if you make it a family activity and it's structured and it's kind of like what everyone's just going to do that night, that can be helpful. You know, it's not forcing it down their throat, but it's kind of like, hey, once a month, our Saturday night activity is we're going to play board games. And, you know, you're going to participate, so either you bring the game that you like or you're going to play what we have on the table, right? And I do think there's something to be said about, I guess, what we would call nowadays analog entertainment, because it's not virtual entertainment. It's not as fast paced. It's not like YouTube. You know, when you get bored of a video, you just switch to the next one because they've got the sidebar scrolling with all other kinds of videos that might interest you. You know, board games, I mean, there's one objective and you have to finish the game, right? I mean, you could walk away from it, but then what's the alternative? I guess another board game if it's family board game night. So you have to be able to kind of sit through one thing. And I've been talking to a lot of parents of toddlers and younger children. And, you know, of course, it's like people give varying levels of screen time. But I think YouTube is the hardest because every 2 minutes, if they're bored of something, they just immediately scroll to the next video. But if you actually have them sit down and watch a full-length cartoon or even a cartoon movie, at the very least, it's one objective, it's one theme, right? And they're watching something from start to end, which I think overall is a little bit better for emotional regulation and development than YouTube videos, where literally it's like everybody's just developing attentional issues in a way.
Can you sit down, Dr. Judy Ho, and watch a movie without picking up your phone? And I guess it depends on the movie.
That's a good question, Tommy. Yes. That is a really good question. And I would say that I oftentimes, when I start watching something, will start to get this feeling like I need to pick up my phone. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I do, and I'm like, oh, you know, and don't do that. But it's such a habit, right? We're so used to stimulation from all angles, you know, doing multiple things at a time. And I literally have to tell myself before I start a movie, I'm going to watch this without picking up anything else. Like, I have to remind myself, right? So that's what's crazy about it. Like, it kind of develops insidiously. Sometimes you don't realize that now you're doing everything that, you know, you say you're not going to do. So it is a habit that I have to essentially consciously make an effort to break.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. 504-260-1870. I think I have a way to keep kids entertained that I think we've gotten away from that had a lot to do with me developing the way I did, which may be a good thing, maybe a bad thing. I don't know, but it taught me a lot of things. I will explain what that is when we come back, talking to Dr. Judy Hoke, and it still does, as a matter of fact, today. Judy Hoke, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. If you have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870, 941 19 till 10, traffic now, WWO. 946, 14 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWO, back with Dr. Judy Ho. Doctor, a text comes in and says, our four-year-old child has an anger problem. He throws a fit uncontrollably when he doesn't get what he wants. Also, he doesn't always listen. It'll take four times for us to say stop XYZ before he stops. 4 years old. Thoughts?
Yeah. So, you know, tantrums are the most common between the ages of 2 to 5. Mm-hmm. And occasional tantrums
not if you work
are
around here. I'm just kidding.
Well, as I said, most common. It didn't seem to never happen again.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, you know, I understand the distress, and it's so sad to see your kids having a tantrum. I mean, Luca just had one last night, and he hasn't had one that bad in months and months and months. And so sometimes it can happen. I think the biggest thing is really watching, well, first of all, how often is it occurring? I mean, if it's happening multiple times a week, and the tantrums are going on for 30 minutes or longer each time, you know, that's not normative. And it is time to consult with a professional who can teach you some skills, both parenting skills and also child self-regulation skills to help with that. But I think if it's somewhat normative, but obviously just distressing because it's happening with somewhat of a frequency and it's clearly upsetting whenever it does happen, you know, it's really important to keep in mind a couple of things. One is, only have one person managing the person when they're in the middle of a tantrum. So sometimes everybody wants to pitch in, you know, mom and dad and grandma, everybody has something to say to the person, try to calm them down. That's too overwhelming for a child when they're in the middle of a tantrum. So just have one person be the person to communicate with the child. I think the second thing is always to make sure that you speak in short sentences. You know, they're not going to be hearing your reasoning as you reason out, you know, why they couldn't get this toy or why they have to leave their friend's house at this point. Got to just be really short, and there's little things that you can do to try to help them to self-soothe, like either demonstrating for them what to do, or sometimes if they're younger, like a four-year-old, I think sometimes you can still just kind of sit there and just hold them. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to be held, then you just tell them, like, do like mommy, take deep breaths, right? Or like, do you need some quiet time? Let's sit down here. You know, things that are very, very simple for a child to grasp and just helps them to learn emotion regulation skills at a developmentally appropriate phase. After the tantrum is over, then you have to talk about it. Sometimes you're just like, oh, big sigh of relief. I don't want to deal with this. Doesn't have to be immediate, but it should be within a few hours and say, you know, just a little while ago, you had this big tantrum. Can we talk about what that was? Can you tell me how I can help you next time when you get this upset so that we can prevent this from happening? Because that was upsetting for you and it was upsetting for me too. One tool that I found is really helpful is to get one of those emotional cards or emotional flip books that they sell on Amazon. They're pretty cheap and it helps kids to communicate their feelings when they don't know, right? So if they don't know the word, they can at least point to the picture of how they feel. And that's a good starting place. Okay, well, you were mad. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what we can do when we're mad.
Somebody texted in. This is not a bad question. Is there an average time for a tantrum? Is there a time limit on a tantrum where it's like, okay, that's enough?
Yeah, that's a good related question. So I think, again, anything from a few minutes to 20 minutes, unbelievably, are normative. And I know that that's stressful when you think about it as a parent, and those 20 minutes can feel like forever. But usually they are able to be distracted after a period of time. So obviously, maybe not in the first 5 minutes. But after a period of time, most kids can be directed to something else. And so that is one way to try to shift them off of that. I think that if it's getting to 30 minutes multiple times a week, like I just mentioned, that is a little too much. And I think it's time to consult a professional.
All right, I mentioned this earlier. What taught me a lot, and I know a lot about a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. I know a little about a lot of different things. Let's put it that way. Maybe not, you know, I'm not an engineer or anything. But you know what did that, Dr. Judy? Reading. Not necessarily. Mm-hmm. I used to love these biographies of people I would read. I would read novels. I would not know what this word meant, so I would look it up. It developed vocabulary. It kept me entertained. I think we've gotten away from that, and I think with the electronic devices, yeah. And I'm not trying to sound like an old-timer or anything, But actually, I'm reading a novel now, and I was talking to Jordan about this the other day, our producer, that it had been a long time since I'd done any recreational reading because I read so much for work. It's kind of nice. Have we gotten away from that? Do you think maybe that could be an answer if people could just get kids to read again?
Yeah, I mean, I love reading, but it was definitely something that I had to develop over time. Mm-hmm. And I think that it is very, very likely that we have gotten away from that because there's all of these other things that are stimulating us all the time. And so reading is great because obviously it helps you to develop really important English reading comprehension or whatever language that you prefer to read in, language comprehension skills. It also helps to develop your imagination. It actually does help to develop emotional regulation and distress tolerance because, you know, when there isn't anything else to do and you're bored and you're reading, it can become a favorite activity. Plus, of course, it's easy to take anywhere, to take a book somewhere. And so I do think that when you give a child a structured amount of time to read, that is a helpful way to do it. And, you know, if you're at home, you can just say, okay, 30 minutes before bedtime, go grab your favorite book. And like, we're all going to read. It's easiest if parents are doing the same thing, right? If you're going to tell your kid to do it, you got to do it too. So you got to put your device away and you pick a book and they pick a book and you guys just read side by side. And sometimes, you know, maybe they want to show you something in their book. That's fine. But for the most part, they're reading on their own. And I think that that is an amazing activity. I'm so glad that you brought that up.
And it can just expose you to so many other things where what happened for me was like, it's, wait, what is that? What is all that about? That was not part of my life. But then I realized that there were things beyond my immediate circle that was happening in the world. It makes sense to you?
Right. Plus, it's a conversation starter. I mean, we've all been in those situations, right? I mean, if you think back to your childhood, you know, maybe there was like a hot book everybody was reading and then like you would talk about it. Like, oh, hey, like, did you get to chapter 10 or did you finish the book? I mean, it's something to discuss with your peers. And most of the times, I think my peers and I were reading the same book, whether it was because at school or because we had similar interests. And it was always a great way to have a conversation.
Godfather, page 17. Just kidding. Dr. Judy, thank you. And have a great have a great week. And we'll talk to you again soon. Say hi to Luca. Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Newell is out on location today. We'll talk to him about what he's got coming up for you when we return here on WWL.